If it's happening now, we're talking about it. This is Hamilton Today with Scott Thompson on 900 CHML.
Hey, it's Hamilton Today. I'm Curtis Thompson, Scott's son. Major Tom McKay is on the board. Wild Will Erskine booking the guests. And the legendary CHML newsroom, Jennifer McQueen. Here's Scott Thompson.
Lots left over this week. It's been a pretty active week. And guess what? It continues today. By the way, has anybody seen the Prime Minister? Huh? Crickets? Anybody? Anybody seen the? Oh, we got one hand at the back. Yes. Oh, he's in Thunder Bay this morning. Why? Announcement. There you go. That's really odd that the Prime Minister isn't around today because, number one, today is the 40th anniversary of his famous father and better Prime Minister, I would say, Pierre Elliott Trudeau, taking a walk in the snow and decided to pack it all in 40 years ago today. Is Justin thinking the same? Oh, can we be so lucky? Oh, it'd be like New Year's Eve. We'd be playing 1999. We'd be playing Celebration. We'd be playing Auld Lang Syne. If that was to happen, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to overflow there. But you know, just the fantasy there got me so excited. So we're not sure exactly why he is not in for two major, major announcements that have been today. Is he taking a skate on the canal? Okay, but there's always life jackets. No. Anyway, the search continues. Anyway, the big deal, the health minister Holland tap dancing his way through the NDP PharmaCare bill, and which, of course, let's be honest, unless Jagmeet Singh had the prime minister pinned with his face to the mat until he said uncle, there would be no PharmaCare. And I'm not really sure what it's all about, and we're going to find out this afternoon. But I think it just involves diabetes, drugs, and birth control at this point. Like, that's what it seems to be. And in some situations, they're just giving the money to do it, which is exactly what the provinces they wanted to do in the first place, rather than making some grandioso government program to suck up more government employees and cost us more money. Because, again, we're catering to an extremely small percentage of the population, which needs to be catered to. But what does it do to everyone else who gets theirs a different way, their medication? So, again, very unusual that the health minister is making this announcement after Jagmeet Singh kind of spoiled the party on Friday. The prime minister nowhere to be found. And earlier as well, Anita Anand, Treasury Board, announcing a complete refocus on their spending priorities to include housing, healthcare, and defense. And defense. When have you ever heard the Liberals talk about spending on defense? So there's two major announcements going on and a major scandal. And that would be, well, two major scandals, if you want to count it, Rivcan, but it's kind of dropped down the list now. But this in regard to the two fired man and woman, husband and wife scientists, we now find out at the Winnipeg lab, we now find out that the Prime Minister's office covered up the infiltration of the Chinese Communist Party into this Winnipeg lab. For various reasons. This was all before the election, and it was also happening at the same time that Justin was working on that vaccine deal with China that they ended up pulling out from underneath them. So, like a big scandal today, plus two major announcements, confirming Jagmeet Singh's and the NDP's PharmaCare on at least two things anyway. And then Anita Anand announcing that, you know, we're going to completely change the direction of our spending. And then falling by the wayside, the Winnipeg lab story, which handles top secret deadly virus stuff. So, and these people were deported, this husband and wife, scientist team, for working with the Chinese Communist Party, bringing students in, just all kinds of weird stuff that shouldn't be allowed to happen as we, again, this all prior to the last election, which there's allegations of Chinese Communist Party election interference. I mean, my goodness, how many more dots do we have to connect here? So two big announcements, one on the confirming the NDP's pharmacare bill with the Liberals, and then the second one with Anita Anand in regard to the change or refocusing of spending. And then the scandal involving the Winnipeg lab and the Chinese Communist Party. And as well, the ArriveCan app, which, you know, now we're finding out that some of the money went to a person who was actually a government employee. We're not even going to get to that today. You need a program just to follow all the crap that's going on with this government. And where is the Prime Minister? Has anybody seen? It's like, where's Waldo? Where's JT? Is he over here? Where's JT? Is he over there? Where is he? All this great stuff going on, and is he taking a walk in the snow? Perhaps going for a skate on the thawing canal? Where is JT? Can he at least pretend he's interested in any of these decisions or any of these policies or any of these big announcements? Can he at least pretend he's got a handle on what's going on in Winnipeg and with ArriveCan? Where is he? Maybe, you know, he's taking a, well, he's not. He's his, I looked up his itinerary and today he's in Thunder Bay. So whether that involves, there'd be snow in Thunder Bay, there'd still be snow up there. Maybe he's going for that walk. All right, enough. We were talking just last week, the other week, that Canada's fertility rate has hit the lowest, its lowest point in history, 1.3, the average couple having kids, 1.3 child. So children, there you go. And you know how you got at least hit 2.1 if you want any growth. And obviously, immigration has been a key in helping keep Canada's population growing and such. But I remember back in the day, you know, some of the reason that people were having less kids or perhaps none at all was because of opportunity, education, more and more women entering the workforce, becoming professionals and just generally more better educated, everybody. And so as a result, couples are waiting later to have kids, fertility issues and such. And it just seemed that life was getting in the way at one point of us having more kids. Now, less to do with that and more to do with it's just too dang expensive. And many, up to about 65%, are saying, you know, it's too expensive for us to have kids, which when you think about it is a terrible reason not to. And I'll leave it at that. Let's bring in Sean Simpson, VP of Ipsos Public Affairs, with us now. Sean, thank you for the time. Hope you're well.
I am. Thank you.
Have you ever seen this result before where cost has been the reason for not having kids? What has it traditionally been?
Well, I think part of it is a paradigm shift over the generations where having children is not as important to people when it comes to having a fulfilling life. Mm-hmm. So when we ask people what are those things that are important to them, the first was having a job or career that they enjoy. The second was having close friends. The third was having a lot of money. And the fourth is having children. And I think, you know, our parents' generation, perhaps it was, well, you get married, you buy a house, and you have kids. And obviously, fewer people are getting married than they used to. Buying a house is, you know, unattainable for many people. And maybe if you take those things away, then it's natural that we're, you know, likely to have fewer children. What's remarkable about the data is that when we asked people of childbearing age what the ideal number of children to have is, only 12% said zero. Only 12% said that they'd ideally have no kids. So, you know, there's still 9 in 10 Canadians who would want to have children, but something's holding them back. And as you identified, that something is primarily money.
Obviously, cost a factor, but you bring in a valid point. It's affordability on everything. It's costing us all more to live, and including if you add one or two more people to the family. So that would be affordability issues like groceries, rent, housing, what have you. And then obviously education after that. So add that onto the pressures we're seeing in a post-COVID world. It doesn't look too hopeful. What do we do do to solve this? Is can we create an environment where we look at this differently, or is immigration the only answer here?
Well, it's likely a combination of both. But, you know, with birth rates getting as low as they are, the question remains as to whether or not we can even, you know, welcome enough people to sustain our population, if not grow it, of course. So there are a number of I guess, policy options available to lawmakers to try to encourage people to have more children. But, you know, the efficacy of that is questionable because we've seen many sort of Scandinavian, other European countries taking some of these steps, and they're only quite marginal in improving fertility rates there. So, for example, 82% would support tax credits for parents with children in the household. 8 in 10 support increased access to subsidized childcare or legislation to make work more flexible for parents. 3/4 support longer and better paid maternity and paternity leave for parents. If we go down the list, a majority support every intervention that we mentioned, even 61% supporting and covering the cost of fertility tests and in vitro fertilization. Of course, British Columbia just actually came out with legislation that they would fund, you know, one round of IVF. So, you know, these are remarkable level of support here for Canadians to address the issue. But, you know, the other side is desire, and some people just, you know, don't have that desire because they're prioritizing other things in their lives.
And, you know, like you said about ethics and such, okay, we're going to make it really profitable for the average family, the average couple to have kids. Is that really the incentive to be starting a family? You know, considering there's so many different views of what is going on in 2024. What about, and this was fascinating, $300,000 approximately to raise a kid till 17. Are couples looking at that and going, holy smokes, we could put a down payment on a house with that?
Yeah, no doubt they are. The Canadian context here is that Canadians are third most concerned about inflation, interest rates, or just call it affordability in the world. And it's on par with places like Turkey and Argentina, where inflation is, you know, 100% or more. We know from our polling for Global News that a majority of households, and certainly parents with kids in the household, are worried about putting food on the table. So the last thing you need is more children with mouths to feed, because then those affordability concerns become even more acute. So this is, you know, in large part a rational decision that Canadians feel is solving, you know, their immediate problem at hand, which is being able to afford a family. The unintended consequence is, if you go to the macro level instead of the micro, that low fertility rates have serious consequences for our population. We don't have a tax base to support our aging population. The economy doesn't grow, et cetera, et cetera. And so it's no wonder that a majority of Canadians feel that this is bad news. A low fertility rate is bad news. But 1 in 3 actually think it's good news because there are already enough people on the planet. And if we look at the results under those people age of 35, nearly half of them think that it's actually good news that we have lower fertility rates. And guess what? Younger people, those are the childbearing years.
Wow, what a discussion. Sean Simpson with us, VP of Ipsos Public Affairs. Fascinating information in regard to what the new family is going to look like moving forward. Sean, thanks for the time. Be well.
My pleasure.
This was fascinating because we talked about this last week, and that is the PharmaCare announcement. And we were just fortunate enough to have booked NDP leader Jagmeet Singh on the show for Friday. And lo and behold, on Friday, he makes the announcement of the PharmaCare plan. And I asked him all kinds of questions about how it would work and what it was. And it was just, no, we were getting universal single payer coverage in PharmaCare, that it was, you know, and I remember even asking him, well, what about the other 90% that are already covered with private or through their employer or what have you? And there was no real answer. And this was another question that I asked, what does it include? And he really didn't say anything. And as you dig down more and dig down more, and today there's finally announcement from the Liberal government acknowledging that the plan is actually going to go through. It really is just about a diabetes drug and birth control drugs. So it's really just two categories, and it's really being sold like this is a universal single payer system for everything. And then as you eventually get to it, and my goodness, it's taken at least 3 or 4 days to find out that other medications may be added in the future. But right now it looks like, and it's great to see, I guess, if this is what is the best idea, and many aren't sure it is, to get this remaining percentage of the population covered who don't have it through their employer or what have you. So it's finally being announced, or at least we're getting some sort of clarity as to what it does involve. Let's try to expand on that. David Baxter is with us, digital broadcast journalist with Global News in Ottawa and here now. David, thank you for the time. Hope you're well.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me, Scott.
So, David, is that accurate? Once we get the details here and break it down, this is really for diabetes and birth control at this point. Is that accurate?
Yeah, so that's going to be the main two types of drugs covered off the hop here. So diabetes, that's going to cover insulin for type 1, type 2 diabetes, a few other medications in there. It's looking to get coverage for insulin pumps and some similar devices. One big thing that won't be covered, Ozempic and drugs of that nature, those aren't included in the formulary at this point. And then on the contraception front, it's very similar to what already exists in British Columbia. So that's coverage for birth control pills, IUDs, emergency contraception. That's going to be covered in the first run here. And really what the legislation does, it's a framework for an eventual universal program. So what that means is here, at first, once the legislation passes, it's just going to be like, here is like the legal mechanism for it to exist in place. And eventually more drugs will be added to the formulary as the years go by. But the legislation just introduced today, it still has to go through the House of Commons. So that's going to be debate in the House itself, a committee study, possibly some amendments coming up. Then it has to go through the Senate before it all receives royal assent and eventually gets passed into law. But of course, healthcare delivery, it's a provincial jurisdiction. So ultimately, what the federal government is going to have to do to make anything work on a practical level is negotiate individual deals with every province and territory to get pharmacare programs in place, because pharmacists, they can't charge the cost of these drugs directly to the province, to Ottawa. They have to charge it to the provinces. So there's a lot of work that has to happen before any of this actually becomes an on-the-ground reality for anyone who may not have coverage for diabetes drugs or looking for help on paying for contraceptives.
Is there any sort of timeline, David, as to when a person will be able to walk into a pharmacist and be able to utilize all this?
At this point, no concrete timeline, because, of course, those negotiations have not begun here for any of these deals. And, you know, in some provinces, Quebec and Alberta, they've already signaled, no, we don't want to be part of this federal program. We want to do our own thing. In Quebec's case and in Alberta's case, they just want whatever their per capita funding envelope would be of the National Pharmacare Plan. Minister Mark Holland was asked about that today. He says, you know, he did speak with all the provincial and territorial health ministers before releasing the legislation. And in the cases of Alberta and Quebec, he feels like there is potential ground to make up there and they could come to some understanding. But this is going to be a long time coming. This would be very similar to what happened with $10 a day daycare, where the legislation was first introduced. And it did take quite a while for some provinces to get on board. If I remember correctly, it was over a year in some cases. So it might not be until 2025 some people are seeing their diabetes drugs or contraceptives covered by Ottawa.
Obviously, anything that helps get people help is a good thing. But has there been any comments as to whether this is the most effective way to do this, the most efficient way to do this? Because we've talked to the Ontario Pharmacy Association, and they said no, they don't agree with this. They're into a mixed thing, and that it's really about funding the programs that the province already has in place, as opposed to coming up with another template. I remember talking to the Ontario Dental Association about the same thing with dental care. So, again, it sounds good because everybody wants everybody to get the help that they need. But is this the right way to go about doing it? Or are we making the same mistakes we made with healthcare and now just using that broken template to add pharmacare? Any comment on that from whether it's opposition or those in the industry?
I spoke to a rep from the Canadian Pharmacists Association here in Ottawa earlier today, and she was raising some similar concerns where they have ways to, you know, bill provinces for drugs covered under the various provincial plans through private healthcare as well. I mean, so private health insurance as well. So that's just a big question on the back end of this is for pharmacists, how is this all going to work? They don't really know yet. And unfortunately, we probably aren't going to know more details on that until we actually see these negotiations shake out. So once again, that's going to be quite a ways down the road before we actually know how it's going to work on a practical level beyond here's the big blue sky idea, but the nitty gritty, there's still a lot of I's to dot and T's to cross, for lack of a better word.
Are you surprised? Where's the Prime Minister today? I understand his itinerary says he's in Thunder Bay. Are you surprised the Prime Minister isn't a part of this decision or this announcement, rather, or the announcement that Anita Anand made earlier today about the changing in direction of finances and such? Are you surprised that the Prime Minister isn't in on this?
No, I'm not surprised there. From day one, this was always driven through the health ministry. So Mark Holland, he'd be the government lead there. Don Davies, for anyone who watched the announcement today, the gentleman from the NDP, he was the health critic. They were the two main elected officials involved in these negotiations and really representing the perspectives of their parties. So no, I'm not too surprised that the Prime Minister was not there. I was tied up covering the PharmaCare beat, so I haven't been able to play too much catch up on what Minister Anand had to say about the government estimates and future spending plans. For the budget that's going to come out likely sometime next month, potentially in April, don't expect to see costing for PharmaCare in that document. The Minister Mark Holland said as much earlier today on that front. He says, odds are this program, it's not being implemented in the 2024-2025 fiscal year. So don't expect to see any real costing there. However, he did estimate that covering contraceptives and diabetes medication cost somewhere in the ballpark of $1.5 billion that could start rolling out late in the fiscal year if some of these deals with the provinces and territories start to be finalized and actually take practical effect. But likely we won't see more costing on how much PharmaCare would be until sometime in 2025, 2026.
All right, David Baxter with us, digital broadcast journalist with Global News in Ottawa on the PharmaCare legislation announcement today. David, thank you so much for the time. Be well.
No problem. Same to you, Scott.
Yesterday, we were talking about surge pricing and Wendy's. They were going to start using surge pricing, which basically means more demand. I guess during more demand periods, like dinner and lunch, the prices would go up midday, at night, perhaps when they're not so much, the prices would come down. And by the time we got Bruce Winder on to talk about all of this, it seems that they've changed their position on all of it. And I don't think he's surprised to talk about it. Bruce Winder with us, retail analyst and author of Retail Before, During, and After COVID-19, and here now. Bruce, thanks for the time. Hope you're well.
Yeah, I'm doing well, Scott. Thanks for having me on the show.
So I'm watching you on media last night, and I'm thinking, ooh, we got to get Bruce on this. And by the time, of course, we get you on, it's already reversed the decision. And I guess I'm assuming you're not surprised?
Yeah, I'm not too surprised because there was quite a bit of blowback, you know, across all media channels once the CEO released some discussion about this on the earnings call earlier this week. And now I guess they changed their tune and they said, no, we're not going to raise prices during peak hours. We're just going to lower them during non-peak hours. So a little bit of a walk back on that.
So do you think this was the original plan, Bruce? Because that was my first question was, so how much does my burger cost during each time?
Yeah, I'm not really sure this was the original plan. I mean, there might be some spin doctors at work here. Because normally when companies administer and roll out dynamic pricing, It's really to make more money because they can charge more during peak times. And that's part of the calculus that says, hey, we can make more money. It's also about them trying to smooth over their demand, which they're still doing, you know, by bringing people in off peak hours to try to sort of utilize their staff more. So normally it's sort of both sides of it. How companies make money is using the up and the down.
Do you think surge pricing was invented to give people a discount or to get more money?
I think it's to make more money. I mean, that's kind of what everyone talks about in the world is when you have surge pricing. You know, there's a way to sort of optimize your pricing, if you will, or maximize your profits, because, you know, you condition your consumers to pay more during times that are busy, and you start to increase your margins, your profit margins during that time.
So why does it work for Uber? Does it work for fast food?
Well, I think Uber has a bit of a duopoly, right? I mean, if you look at Uber, there's Uber and Lyft, and that's about it, right? So, you know, I don't think anyone really loves it. And I think what Uber does, the reason Uber does it too, is they have drivers, and what they're claiming anyways is that they have to raise rates to incent drivers to get on the road when there's snowstorms and things, because there's not enough drivers participating. That's what they say anyways. But I think it's also, you know, a way to make more money as well.
How does Wendy's handle this now as far as damage control? You said it's still in place, but it won't be used to raise prices. Is that good enough? Or is the public going to buy into that?
Well, I think they'll still get some benefit out of it, because if they're lowering a little bit of price during the non-peak hours, they're going to draw in people, maybe more people than they normally would, you know, and they might be able, if they plan it right, they might be able to make a little more money by selling people, you know, burgers and fries at off hours, albeit at a lower price. We also don't know how much they're going to discount it during non-peak hours to, whether it's 2% or 5% or what have you.
Obviously, if you need a ride, you need a ride. Food, it's a different story. Do you think that this will take away from business during the peak hour? So in other words, where we're going to go to, you know, to get a burger at 6 o'clock, but let's wait till or do it at 4 or 5 or do it at 7 and it'll be cheaper. So you're just taking the same client and pushing it over to a different time.
Yeah, that's a great point. And that's one of the risks they have, right, is that people are going to go earlier and sort of cherry pick and arbitrage the pricing. Hopefully, though, what they'll find is that, you know, they'll draw in people who maybe weren't going to go to them during the non-peak hours and see if they can entice them with a bit of a discount. But they've kind of dug themselves into a bit of a PR hole now. And, you know, hopefully they can just kind of quiet it down for a while. And then it's a bit of a lesson for other companies to be careful. You know, whenever you implement a strategy that isn't very customer focused, it's inward focused, you know, it normally doesn't end well. You really have to put the customer first, and whatever you do should be customer driven.
Is this a topic in the boardrooms of McDonald's and Burger King right now?
Oh, for sure. They're all talking about it, saying, wow, I'm glad they tried it and we didn't. They got egg on their face, pardon the pun, this week. Egg McMuffin, I guess. And now, you know, I think McDonald's and everyone were hoping it would have worked, because there would have been an opportunity for them to join the party and make more money. But right, I think there's going to be a quick retreat on this one now.
All right. Bruce Winder with us, retail analyst and author of Retail Before, During, and After COVID-19. Wendy's repositioning itself on surge pricing with the burger. Bruce, thanks for the time and insight. Much appreciated. Be well.
Yeah, you too, Scott. Take care.
Scott Thompson isn't satisfied with an answer.
He'll delve into the issue until he is.
You're listening to Hamilton Today with Scott Thompson
on Hamilton's News, Today's Talk
900 CHML.
Today is the 40th anniversary of Pierre Elliott Trudeau's walk in the snow. We have not seen the Prime Minister today. Is there anything to that? I know. I'll stop. And I've checked his itinerary. He's supposed to be in Thunder Bay today, but I found it fascinating that he was nowhere around with the big PharmaCare announcement with the NDP from Friday, and then the announcement with the health minister today. No JT, and even Anita Anand, Treasury Minister, announcing refocusing of finances for the government, going to refocus on military, housing, and health care, which is a complete 180. And why the Prime Minister isn't involved, I'm not sure. Henry Jasek, let's ask him. Professor Emeritus, Political Science Professor, McMaster University, here now. Henry, thank you for the time. Hope you're well.
I am. Thank you, Scott.
Are you surprised, Henry, that the Prime Minister isn't around for the PharmaCare announcements?
Well, the thing is, it is a problem in the sense that if he really makes a big deal about it, people are going to say, well, this was the NDP's idea, and he may be adding, good support for the NDP among people. So it is, and the NDP has the trouble too. Is, you know, if they start, you know, talking about it and claiming, you know, they're doing well, then they may unwittingly give support to Trudeau. So it's ticklish when there's two parents here of this particular issue.
That's an interesting way to look at it. Two parents. All right. And yeah. And Anita and Ann making the announcement today about refocusing where their finances are going, housing and healthcare, no surprise there, but adding military to the fine. What are your thoughts?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think, of course, all sorts of people, important people in the world have been criticizing the Canadian government for not doing its fair share in terms of NATO, and we never have. And they, although the government argues we have in a way, but really they get a lot of criticism. And Zelensky is the latest who has criticized them. He thanks, you know, for us for what he gets, but he has these, you know, comments that, well, someday everybody will be giving the appropriate amount to NATO, and of course he's talking about Canada. So, yeah, so, and I think the public basically is, you know, there's large groups of people in the public who essentially think, you know, that, you know, we really should be helping Zelensky. This is really a problem because they contrast it to the U.S. is not. And so they probably, that we together with other NATO countries have to pick up the burden for a while until the U.S., you know, sorts out whether it's going to be able to, basically give the weapons that are needed.
All right, so let's talk about the legendary walk of 40 years ago. Many talking about it this year. Obviously, the Prime Minister not around today. What are your thoughts on this anniversary and all of the hoopla that people like me are making?
first of all, I mean, the thing about the elder Trudeau, he often liked to put on, you know, and play around with the media. You know, we know he did that the whole time. And I think that he came to a decision, I think, that he said, I did everything I wanted to do. I'm tired of this, but I have to make it, you know, something dramatic so I can talk. So he comes up with this idea that somehow this walk in the snow, and he had sort of
Did we just lose Henry? We're having some technical difficulties. We'll see if we can get Henry, are you there? Oh, we lost Henry. All right. We'll see if we can get Henry back. So anyway, the point that Henry was getting to was that today marks the 40th anniversary of the walk in the snow. As Henry was alluding to, perhaps the decision was made quite a bit earlier. But that being said, there's always fun and drama in that sort of thing. And obviously the parallel we were drawing today was that the Prime Minister has not been around. We understand with his itinerary that he is in Thunder Bay today. And Henry Jasek joins us again. Henry, are you there?
Yes, I am. This was my fault. Sorry.
That's okay. No problem. Continue your thought.
Yeah, well, I think the elder Trudeau liked to, you know, put on, you know, and things to the press. And as I was saying, I think that he had decided he's done what he wanted to do. He'd been in there long enough. He figured, you know, he accomplished, particularly in his last term, the constitutional stuff that he wanted to do. And he basically, didn't want to really just basically say, I'm tired and I want to leave. I've had enough. He comes up with this idea that, well, I went for a walk in the snow, and somehow I got this great revelation that I should quit. He was always putting on the press and everybody else. You know, he always had wisecracks. We know that.
Was his government in the same position that Justin Trudeau's is in now? Compare the two at the time.
Well, what I would do is say one other thing that's very important. I think that the elder Trudeau did not want to go up in a campaign, or didn't even think he needed to. Because the conservatives, the progressive conservatives then, had a leader who was from Quebec, Brian Mulroney. And I think he respected Brian Mulroney. They both, at that time, were worried about Quebec wanting to leave Confederation. And so they were often, in a way, not very far apart in terms of their views of how the country should be run. Look today, I'm sure the Liberals and Justin does not have respect for the conservative leader that he that they're facing. They don't like, he really doesn't like him. And essentially he doesn't want to see someone like, you know, the conservative leader become prime minister. So that's also, I think, also a consideration between the two of them.
What do you think the elder prime minister, Pierre Elliott Trudeau, would think of his son's relationship with the NDP and PharmaCare?
I think, he did things that were, you know, what the NDP might do, and sometimes even more. I mean, he would, you know, there were things in, you know, in the social area. And also he knew that the NDP essentially supported his agenda to make sure we could keep Quebec in the Confederation. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Who's smarter, do you think, Henry? Who do you think smarter, Pierre? Who do you think smarter, Pierre or Justin?
Oh, I mean, Pierre was a brilliant man. I mean, absolutely. There was no question about it. You know, he's very different. You know, and but his son, on the other hand, is a person who I think is a much more sympathetic and, you know, wants to make people feel good. He worries about people, you know, everybody being feeling they're included in Canada. You know, so much for his father. His father figured really that the real important people that had to be, you know, taken care of were the Francophones in Quebec, and he really didn't have sympathy at times. Well, look what he would say to the farmers when they would complain he wasn't doing enough to support the wheat industry, and he would say, well, why should I sell your wheat? You know, that he couldn't, Justin would never say anything like that. You know, he tries to be nice to everybody, maybe too nice.
Henry Jasek with us, Professor Emeritus, Political Science, McMaster University, the 40th anniversary of Pierre Elliott Trudeau's walk in the snow or thereabouts. Henry, thank you for the time. Be well.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Hamilton Today podcast from 900 CHML.
It's just downright embarrassing what's happening in Stoney Creek over the great parking lot debate, which has pitted extremists against extremists as we try to debate what's more important, the car or a home, which is probably the stupidest statement I've heard anybody say. And what we don't seem to find from our politicians at City Hall, and maybe I'm being unfair, is why can't we do both? Clearly, there's a need for parking in downtown Stoney Creek. Clearly, there's a need for housing. So why can't we do both? Why is this always an either-or discussion from one extreme or the other? Why can't we do both? Do both. Do it all and get it done, as opposed to saying, well, no, maybe there's a better alternative over here, which is really just another lengthy distraction, from the project at hand. It's called death by delay. Larry Deanny with us, former mayor of Hamilton, here now. Larry, your thoughts on the great Stoney Creek parking debate?
We always seem to want to debate and fight over issues, don't we, rather than looking
for compromising. Can't we do both here? Can't we do both, Larry?
Well, so here's, and of course, you know, I live in Stoney Creek. I shop at some of the shops. I park in that parking lot on occasion if I can't find some alternatives. So I know the area very, very well. Represented it when I was on local council, and then of course on the city council as well. So I do know the area. Here are the errors that have been made. The answer is yes, we can do both, but here are the errors that have been made. Council directed staff to come up with locations. You know, wherever the city owns property, is it possible to put what they're calling affordable housing on those properties? And nobody's really defined what affordable really means. But nevertheless, let's assume that they do have a definition. And so they came and they presented to council these two parcels, which are currently parking lots. Nobody was informed of that, not even the local councillor, apparently. He had to fight because he was blindsided. He had to fight to delay the decision initially so that he could have a consultation with the community. And that's where the sort of controversy begins, because I'm told over 200 people showed up, both business owners in the area and residents, 200 people, with pitchforks single to day. Right. So now here's the counselor. What's he supposed to do? He's got a huge number of his constituents saying nobody knew about this. You didn't even know about this. Why are they imposing this on us? And have they thought about the implications to the businesses around there? Because it is a downtown Stony Creek area filled mostly, not exclusively, but mostly with small mom and pop shops who rely on that to attract customers. So an error was committed. I mean, did we learn nothing from the tiny homes debate where we had a revolution in the north end of Hamilton for the very same reason? Nobody was informed. The city wanted to slam it into people's neighborhoods without any kind of information given to them ahead of time so that they could digest and build some support. That's the problem. The other issue, of course, in terms of doing both, and I've seen some of the letters in the newspaper, why can't they build parking underground and so on? Well, it's the economics that prevent that from happening. The economics, because when you build parking underground, what you want as an affordable home may not be that affordable if you have to build in that cost. So really, the answer is, can you find a location that's nearby, also shovel-ready, also owned by the city, that might accommodate the same function? It'll make the people in the downtown Stony Creek happy, never mind this fight about cars and where the priority is.
Yeah.
But if you can accomplish it while making people happy, the merchants in the downtown area, and while building some affordable homes, and there are locations where that can happen. The other issue, just last word for me on this, is that, of course, council is being a little disingenuous, because didn't they just turn down a project in Ward 3 where a developer was going to build something for free and give it to the city?
Yeah.
You're right, because it didn't have enough trees or whatever the controversy was there. So, you know, you can't be talking out of both sides of your mouth. You can't be saying we're going to impose something on merchants who don't want it while ignoring a business person who's going to turn something over to the city free of charge for some other concessions on other buildings that he may wish to do. And that isn't the right kind of governance, I don't think. Are there alternatives in Stony Creek? There are.
It's death by delay, Larry. And at the end of the day, you talk about all of these great ideas and such. And 5 years from now, nothing will be changed. The cars will still be parking there and there'll still be nothing built. It amazes me to no end how we just go around and around and around looking for a utopia that isn't there instead of finding a solution.
Right. And so I totally agree with you, Scott. And so when you start having a fight over a particular issue, whether it's a stadium and the location for a stadium, whether it's LRT or not LRT, or whether it's, you know, these two parking lots, you're delaying things and you're not getting things done. Can you just move on and reach some consensus and agreement with people and find somewhere where there's an easier path rather than the hardest path?
Larry Deanny with us, former mayor, city of Hamilton. Why can't we do it all? Why can't we do both? As always, Larry, thanks for the time. Be well.
Thank you, Scott.
The game continues. Where's Waldo? Where's the prime minister? You know, some big announcements today. The NDP PharmaCare thing was announced, and our treasury minister announcing they're going to refocus their financing on things like military, housing, and healthcare. What? And the prime minister is nowhere to be found. Let's bring in Tasha Carradine. Maybe she's seen him. Principal at Navigator and author of The Right Path with us now. Tasha, thank you for the time. Hope you're well.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I am.
Have you seen Waldo?
No, I don't know where he is either. I mean, you know, yeah, right. Thunder Bay is getting money for housing and Manitoba is getting money for green projects and all sorts of things are going on, but he's hiding. He's like the groundhog. He's not out yet.
Well, are you surprised he didn't make, we had Jagmeet Singh on Friday, lucky to land that with the big announcement on PharmaCare. He was over the moon, and I was so surprised the Prime Minister or nobody in the Liberal Party was even talking about it over the course of the weekend or the prior to the weekend or such, and then he's not around for this announcement. Are you surprised?
Well, you know, there was some speculation. Is he going to take a walk in the snow like his father did many, many moons ago on the same day? I'm not sure if he's ready to walk in the snow. I think that the snow is falling pretty hard, though. It's been a very green winter for most of the country, at least out here. But it's when it comes to political snow, it's falling thick and fast, and the government, you know, the polls are just getting worse. So I really think that this blizzard of announcements is, you know, to use another pun, might be an attempt to bring things back. But I don't know if he as a leader can be rehabilitated. I really do feel his time is kind of coming to a close. We just don't know when that is.
Well, you know, obviously, I've got a secret fantasy about the walk in the snow and this all happening. I've got Celebration lined up. I got 1999 Prince. I got all these New Year's Eve songs lined up to play, and thinking, well, he's gone to Thunder Bay, so there must be snow there, even though the canal's thawing and such. Is this an obvious plan during these announcements? Also, with the scandal that's coming out today in regard to what's going on with the Winnipeg lab and such, you'd think he would be forefront with any of this. Is this a planned low-key moment?
Maybe, or maybe it's to showcase other people in his team. This is the problem, is that what comes after Trudeau? That's the issue. It's like everyone speculated, oh, well, Chrystia Freeland, Anita Anand, other members of cabinet, there's been Mark Carney speculation that the big question is, who would it be? Who could fill his shoes? So one of the problems is that he's given people a lot of space to do things. And Chrystia Freeland has been pretty much running the country in many ways ever since she was appointed. But he still would take, you know, ownership of many files and take be front and center. So if there is going to be a transition, name recognition is a problem for a lot of people. They know who Trudeau is, but they don't all know who, you know, Anita Anand is. Even, you know, he demoted her. But the point is that these folks are not household names. So if the Liberals are smart, they will start putting people in the window before he takes that walk in the snow.
With the Treasury Minister making the announcement today, and again, I couldn't keep up with all of this today that was going on. She was announcing a refocusing of money. We're going to refocus what we've got on, and it was military, housing, and healthcare. Housing and healthcare, I guess, isn't surprising, but to hear the military was a part of that. Are you surprised?
No, not at all. I mean, we've been behind the eight ball on this, ignoring what's been going on in the world for years now, and it's coming home to roost. I don't think it's an accident. I think our friends down south are, you know, giving us a little nudge too, and I'm not talking with Donald Trump and his comments about people who don't pay in their NATO bills, but there's a sense, you know, Europe's preparing for war, and we're talking about sending troops into Ukraine. Right? Non-combat troops from Canada, perhaps, but still, Putin's very clear. You put troops in Ukraine, we're at war. So we have to be ready, and we're not. And it's been this kind of Pollyanna attitude that the world is, you know, it's going to be peace in our lifetime constantly. It's not. And many powers are looking at this and saying, yeah, we're already in a cyber war. We've been for quite a while. We've been in an influence war quite a while, but the actual war, luckily, we haven't been in, but we will. I am convinced. And so we have to be ready for when that happens.
More information coming out on the situation regarding the two scientists in the Winnipeg lab. Pierre Poilievre making a lot of hay today about information that they had received, that they had known, that there was business going on that shouldn't be, that wasn't above board. This was all prior to the last election, which we know there was alleged interference in by the Chinese Communist Party, and also around the time of the Chinese vaccine that the Prime Minister was working on that ended up getting pulled out from underneath him. Yeah. What are your thoughts on all of this and the timing of it, the timeline?
Well, the timeline doesn't look good, quite frankly. I mean, this government has for years ignored reports by CSIS. We know this. That's why they were all leaked, because no one was acting on them, that there was Chinese interference at multiple levels, whether it was political or in this case, technological, scientific. We know elite capture has been a thing. Some people think the prime minister has been quite conveniently captured. And when you talk about elite capture, isn't that people wake up one day and say, oh, I'm going to do what China wants me to. It's that you bring influence to bear in different ways to shape their way of thinking about the world, and thinking that, you know, China is. And recently, a speech was made by Dominic Barton, for example, who spoke out and said, you know, we should listen to more what China's doing and what they're telling us and their model of doing things. Well, you know, people have been influenced to say things that are beneficial to the Chinese state and their way of looking at the world, which is totally antithetical to ours, quite frankly. So this has been going on. And I think that we are waking up. Things are coming out. The timeline, like you said, it's very poor. And I always wondered why we were on board with Sinovac, and the idea of a Chinese-based vaccine was very, very strange. But it doesn't look good for this government. And with the commission going on now, too, on foreign interference, it really begs the question. That commission is, honestly, it's way too small. It's covering off just two elections. It needs to look at much more than it's doing right now.
You really need a program to keep up. It's just one thing after another. And you know, it's the common denominator is mismanagement. Tasha Kieradin with us, principal at Navigator, author of The Right Path. Tasha, as always, thanks so much for the time. Be well.
Okay. Thank you, Scott.
When there's an issue, Scott is all in on getting to the heart of it.
This is Hamilton Today with Scott Thompson.
On Hamilton's News, Today's Talk.
900 CHML.
The Canadian Press headline says it all. Fired microbiology lab scientists' loyalty of grave concern to officials, new records show. This involving, of course, the National Microbiology Laboratory in Winnipeg. Two scientists at a high security lab in Winnipeg lost their jobs, sent packing when they failed to protect sensitive assets and information, newly released records show us. The scientists, who are a husband and wife team, had their security clearances taken away over questions of their loyalty to Canada and the potential of coercion or exploitation by a foreign entity, meaning the Chinese Communist Party. More than 600 pages made public Wednesday following a special all-party review of the records. However, not sure if this sheds any light on why the two were actually sent packing. Let's bring in Phil Gursky, president of Borealis Threat and Risk Consulting, former CSIS analyst, and here now. Phil, thanks for the time. Hope you're well.
I am, Scott. This might be our first leap day conversation we've ever had.
And I bet it won't be the last, especially when we're talking about this stuff.
Well, probably not.
So your thoughts on this, and obviously we have chatted about this Winnipeg lab in the past. The timeline here is a bit concerning in the sense that this was prior to the last election, of which there is alleged interference by the Chinese Communist Party. Also, I don't know what was going on between China and the government of the day trying to come up with a vaccine from China. We all know what happened there. They ended up walking away with the intellectual property, and that was that. So what are your thoughts on where we are in this information that has made its way to the media today?
Oh, God, where do we start?
Pursuant
to our previous conversation, Scott, it's one more example of a serious breach of national security, a serious breach of a level 4 lab, which, you know, to remind your listeners, it's because of pretty serious stuff there that we don't want to leak out to the wrong people. And for me, the overarching question, you talk about timeline, what did CSIS know? When did they provide it to the government? And did the government listen? Because we know that they ignored intelligence on Chinese election interference you referred to. So, you know, I know CSIS was probably on this file at some point. They are the ones that, you know, recommend security clearances or not. Were the recommendations ignored, like intelligence ignored? So an awful lot has been made known, but an awful lot has not been made. And I think for me, it's like, what did the government know and when? And what did they decide to do or rather not do with that information?
It seemed that everything sort of came to a head at once, whether it was the vaccine, whether it was this stuff, whatever. It just seemed to all happen around the same time. Is that a coincidence? How does that factor in?
Hard to say. I mean, China, as you mentioned, has been up to this. And I was listening to your previous speaker as well on the show. They've been doing this, you know, forever. And so it should be of no surprise to us that China does steal our technology. They do steal our intellectual property. And so is it a coincidence? Really hard to say, but at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. You know, we've had a threat here for a long time, and the government has just seemed to not take it seriously. And maybe we'll find out more, maybe we won't. But to me, the bottom line is, again, and I've said this 1,000 times, and I apologize for being repetitive, Scott, we have a piss-poor intelligence culture here in this country and a government that doesn't take the information it gets from CSIS seriously.
Do we know why the two scientists were actually sent packing? Has there been any specifics on that?
Not that I'm aware of, but I'm guessing that, you know, again, I'm guessing it was intelligence that CSIS and or other agencies had found out what they were really up to, what their true allegiances were, and they passed that on. And then when the government finally opened its inbox, maybe and read this information, they decided that, hey, maybe we shouldn't have these people have access to this level 4 lab. I'm guessing it has to be pretty serious information to dismiss them, but the nature of that information will probably never be made public, unfortunately.
What about any damage done? Do we know? Did it matter? Did they catch it in time? What about the damage done here?
That's the most important question, the one to which we'll probably never get an answer, Scott. Look, the horse bolted from this barn a long time ago. The fact that these people have been expelled, they're no longer there. We may not know how much they know, how much they passed on. And more importantly, we're not sure what China's going to do with it. Will they use it for their own intellectual property advantage? Probably. You know, China's not a friend of Canada. Could they pass it on to somebody else? Possibly. The problem is that if you don't have a good oversight in terms of what your intel is, and you don't have access to the sources, it's next to impossible to determine what the ultimate end game is here. And, the government was asleep at the switch for far too long. And as a consequence, we can't measure the nature of the impact. And more importantly, Scott, the damage to our reputation amongst our allies as a trustworthy partner when it comes to biotechnology, viruses of this nature, and our ability to ensure national security and that of our allies.
You talked about being asleep at the switch. Are you confident this lab is secure now, that these issues have been corrected, that it's now squeaky clean?
Oh, if I was confident at that level, Scott, I'd be lying to you. I don't know. I don't know whether they're going to take this to heart. We know the government dismissed intelligence on interference for so long. We have a public inquiry that's become a joke. I don't know whether they're going to learn any lessons, Scott. If past performance is indicative of future performance, the answer is probably not, because we have a government that doesn't seem to take this stuff seriously. I hope they've learned, and I hope they put in place better measures, but there's no guarantee on that front, unfortunately.
What about getting to this point? How did this couple get into the lab? How did they qualify for this gig?
Well, they showed up at the door and knocked on it and say, hi, I'm, you know, Bob and Joe, and we'd like to work here. No, I really have no idea. I would assume that for access to this kind of material, there has to be some kind of a vetting procedure. Again, I don't know who's responsible for that vetting procedure. Normally, it's CSIS that does security clearances. I'm not sure exactly what Public Health Agency of Canada does. Does it do their own? I have no idea. Does it ask CSIS? I have no idea. But you'd like to think that at least some background check was done. And if that background check did turn up things of concern, especially when it comes to China, let's face it, Scott, anybody with links to China has to be looked into because of the possibility of influence by the Chinese Communist Party, as you said at the outset. I don't know. This is all serious stuff. And I sincerely hope at least procedures are in place and were followed. And if not, they better put some pretty good procedures in place going forward.
Reaction from China to all of this, because obviously the relationship has changed.
China would say, who, us? You're accusing us of stealing Canadian technology? That's terrible. I am, you know, you besmirched my reputation as a, you know, the People's Republic of China, which you take that with a box of salt, right? I mean, they know they're doing it. We know they're doing it. Let's stop pretending. And so ignore China's reaction and let's help to make our country more secure by not falling prey to it in the future.
Are you surprised today when Anita and Ann announced that they're refocusing funds in the government, and we're sort of veering off topic here, but to include military as well as housing and healthcare? I don't think I've ever heard military, those words come out from a treasury or anybody involved in money of this government.
I'm not sure the government can spell military, Scott. Look, we've been embarrassed on the national stage. You know, we have people like Rick Hillier, retired general, saying we're becoming irrelevant. NATO was asking serious questions about us, so are the Five Eyes. The prime minister goes to Poland and says we're going to spend more on the military after he said we have no intention of meeting the 2% floor for NATO spending. I don't know what it means, Scott. Let's hope they're serious about it, but we'll have to wait and see if, in fact, there's any. You know, they've said this publicly. Is there any action behind it? That'll be for another podcast between you and me.
Phil Gursky with us, president of Borealis Threat and Risk Consulting, former CSIS analyst, talking about the information coming out now regarding the Winnipeg lab leak and two scientists that were sent walking. Phil, thanks for the time and insight. Always appreciate it. Be well.
You too, sir. Enjoy your leap day.
You know, when I think of Scott Radley, I think of Vikings. Men walking around with horns on their head, that sort of thing. It is 550, it's 900 CHML. I'm Scott Thompson, Hamilton Today. Coming up after the 6 o'clock news, the Scott Radley Show. You can read him in your Hamilton Spectator. He's here now. Scott, I hope you're doing well.
Well, I was. I was until I pictured myself with one of those horn helmets and, you know, married to a large opera singer also wearing one of those horn helmet things. And yeah.
Yeah. With a couple on her chest. No, let's not even go there. You know, I just had the visual of the uniform in my mind. All right, let's move on. So what did you want to talk about today?
Oh, yeah, Scott, you know what?
There's a ton of stuff today, and the Prime Minister is nowhere to be found.
I said this to someone the other day, and it's an old cliche, and I generally don't like cliches, but I think this applies, is that these days, doing this job is like drinking out of a fire hose. There is so much stuff coming at you.
Yeah.
And I'm not, I mean, whether it's in Ottawa, whether it's here in Hamilton, whether it's at Queen's Park, I mean, it is impossible to keep up with all the stuff that's going on right now. And so, you know, I'm not sure yet what are going to be the things that slide under the carpet or slip by us. And then later on, we're going to say, oh, we didn't really cover that. Well, it's because there's just, like, I don't know, Scott, is the China lab thing from Winnipeg the biggest story today?
I
would think it would be up there, but is that the thing that's going to grab people's attention? What about the cyber attack in Hamilton? Or what about, as you say, the Prime Minister not being around? Or what about the
PharmaCare bill came out. Yep.
It's impossible to deal with everything. I don't think it's planned, although, I don't know, maybe it is to try and get some things to slip by. I don't know.
I've got, like, you know, you talked about the Chinese lab thing today. The Liberals announcing the NDP PharmaCare thing and the Prime Minister nowhere to be found. Also, Anita Anand announcing a refocus on their spending and focusing on the military, housing, and healthcare. And then the other one was the Winnipeg lab. We already talked about that. And the Arrive Can app. Which I never even got to that today. And apparently somebody in the government was part of the consortium that got some of this money. It was actually an employee.
Yeah.
So there's all kind of, like, there's stuff that we just never even got to.
It is truly remarkable, all the stuff that is
the
going
wheels
on.
Are literally falling off this government.
Well, Scott, it's, I mean, yes, it does sound, it is rather stunning that it seems that at least once a week, and sometimes more, at least every week, we have some new thing going on, seemingly coming out of Ottawa, where you're shaking your head saying, how is this possible? It does suggest that things are not in full control, that things are beginning. And this happens with, let's be honest, it happens with every government in time, it seems, mm-hmm. where you begin to lose control of things. You're not as locked down and whatever, but it's just everywhere. And so this one, I mean, I don't know if people are going to be wildly bent out of shape. Like, I'm not talking about government people. I mean, people are going to be wildly bent out of shape about this lab thing. It's an enormous, unbelievable breach in my mind that I don't know how something like this happens.
And it all happened around the time of the Chinese and Trudeau working on a vaccine, which they pulled the intellectual property and told them to hit the road. And that went out the window. And it was also just before the last election, which is, of course, there's allegations of alleged Chinese Communist Party interference. So the timeline here is just absolutely bizarre. And again, you know, is the average Canadian citizen going to focus on that? Probably not.
But it's just another thing, Scott, that when we have this foreign interference, and I would count this as kind of into that.
Sure it is.
That another reason why this foreign interference inquiry, where the people in opposition are not even allowed to ask questions or have standing at this thing, it's going to be another thing that you got to believe efforts are going to be made to make this thing go away very quickly and quietly. And here's the real challenge. Pierre Poilievre, we all know what the polls are saying right now. If you're the conservatives right now, you've got, what, a year and a half almost until the mandated next election. How do you not only just get out of the way and let the liberals continue to do this to themselves, because you don't need to do anything. How do you stay out of the way? You want to stay relevant, but you don't want to get in the way of the liberals doing this to themselves. But then how do you decide which are the things that when election time comes around, you're going to turn into the narrative and the points you're going to drive home? Because it's like there's so many, you've watered down the problems. If I'm in the conservative caucus room or the conservative attack room, I don't even know now which ones I decide to focus on, because there seem to be so many things right now.
And, you know, I think the biggest challenge, and you alluded to this, is, and I'm sure this is why JT isn't retiring, he's just going to run out the game clock, because the other team can always make a mistake. And the conservatives are notorious for shooting themselves in the foot at the last minute. So I guess on one hand, I can't argue with them running out the game clock, just hoping that, you know, something happens and the opposition implodes.
I mean, I know that today, I believe it's today that's the 40th anniversary of Justin Trudeau. Yes,
we talked about it all day, and we haven't seen him. So we're thinking he's walking in the snow. His itinerary says that he is in Thunder Bay. There's snow up there. There must be.
I don't know. Here's the thing I was wondering about. I don't know that Justin Trudeau would hang his party completely out to dry. I don't, but the reason I mentioned that
he's doing it.
Well, but I mean in a bigger way, because what if Pierre Poilievre doesn't make a mistake? And what if 5 months out from an election, or right before the election call, or 6 months, the polls are looking like this, or even worse? Is he going to allow himself to run and potentially be obliterated and humiliated? Or 5-6 months out, does he then say, I resign, I'm handing it off? Now you've got to have a leadership convention, you've got to find someone. Then you're really dumping a load of poop onto whoever follows behind you. I don't know if I think he would do that. But I also find it very hard to believe that if the polls are looking like this going into an election, that he will let himself face the music that probably would be coming if it's still looking like this. I find that so hard to believe.
That's an interesting point. We'll have to wait and see.
Thanks for listening to the Hamilton Today podcast. You can listen to the show live weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 on 900 CHML and online at 900CHML.com.
That's it for us. Thanks for listening. As always, we leave it to you, the taxpaying customer, to have the last word. Via email from Steve, maybe JT is not visible today because of the Winnipeg Chinese scientist scandal. Seems Poilievre would have torn a fistful of curlies from the poor Justin over this. I smell a personal day coming tomorrow for JT. As ever, Steve. Keep right, except to pass.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.